This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this hour number three. Happy Friday to you. And if you're a baseball fan, yeah, it's back. And we'll get it April 7th on opening day as they came to an agreement yesterday. We'll talk about that with Gabe Lax coming up in this hour. We'll also get into more NFL. We'll talk more about the Khalil Mack trade to the L.A. Chargers, a team that was right there in the playoff hunt until the very end, and now in a very, very loaded AFC West. They have now upended their and added something to their defense in that division. Last hour, we were talking about a little golf and the Players' Championship, which is going on this week. And this is the golf course. If you're not totally into the PGA Tour, but you kind of know some of it, this is the course with the famous Island Green on 17, which had always been sort of gimmicky for a long time when the course was created in the 70s. And even in the 80s, it was always like, oh, the 17th hole in the water and the Island Green. And it's not a long hole. It's like 130 yards, right? But it is so fun to watch where guys are just trying to pick the right club. Do I go with sand wedge, pitching wedge? Do I hit a lower shot with spin? Do I hit a higher shot and have it come? And watching the balls bounce off that island into the water. It has got to be, I think as a pro, the most nerve-wracking hole in that it is simple enough that if there was no water around it, none of these guys would have problems. And yet psychologically with the water around it, they can find the drink. You can see guys go to the drop area and hit three or four more shots into that green. And while the tournament isn't necessarily won or lost on that hole, it can derail you if you have a bad, make a five or something on that particular location. I have always said there are a few holes in golf, in all of golf, that I would like to try to play. I think the 12th at Augusta, the 13th at Augusta are two of my favorite holes. I think the 18th at Pebble Beach is one of my favorites, the 7th at Pebble Beach, the 14th at St. Andrews. But I have to say the 17th at TPC Sawgrass would be on that list too. Just, I don't know, pitching wedge and then just get my goggles and scuba gear because I'll be going looking for it. Because I know I would put it in the drink. I know for sure I would. Still, I'd love to try it. All right, coming up, we'll continue to look at the Major League Baseball coming back and some of the things that won't be around this upcoming season. And we'll also get into the Khalil Mack trade because it's a good day for Ron's Chargers on another deal that that NFL has made this week in terms of trades. That's all coming up on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number three, Gabe Lax is going to join us, talk the baseball deal that brings the sport back. If you've just joined us, so you get baseball on April 7th. So you're going to get some doubleheaders because they're going to play all 162 so that the players can get all of their money. But done is the seven-inning doubleheaders. Remember when Madison Bumgarner threw a no-hitter in seven innings, and we were like, does it count? Like, how does this work? Yeah, we don't have to worry about that anymore. Also, the man on second base to start extra innings, that is now over. So that's done. And you got universal designated hitter. Now, I bring up this because while I'm not old, I'm certainly old enough to remember when American League versus National League was a real thing. It was not only two different leagues. It was like they played baseball completely different. You talk to a National League person, I swear they were like, well, we play baseball. What the American League does is intramural softball. Like the thing you see in towns where like guys with beer guts playing softball, that's what they're playing because we're playing real baseball. And I was like, really? And they were like, yeah, oh, double switch and all that, the pitcher's batting and all that. And you're like, yeah, but you could get the designated hitter and get rid of the boring pitcher at bat striking out on three pitches thing. Like, yeah, but you don't understand the strategy. I'm like, okay, it's strategy, but wouldn't like a guy who hits like 40 home runs a year be better at that spot than, let's say, a pitcher batting 132? But it was a real thing. And then you know what baseball decided to do like in the 90s? They decided to go, yeah, it's all going to be blended together. We're going to have interleague play. Like when I was younger, maybe some of you are like this too. I know, Ron, you're a few years younger than me. If you lived in a National League or American League city, you didn't see the other guys in the other league until the All-Star game or like Monday Night Baseball. You certainly couldn't go to the ballpark to see them.
Yeah. No, I never watched. I mean, I grew up in L.A. I never watched Angel games.
Yeah, right.
They were televised, but it wasn't. That wasn't for me. I didn't listen to them on the radio. I couldn't tell you anybody who was on the team.
All the times I went to Fenway Park as a kid, and I went a lot, I never saw Steve Garvey.
Yep.
I never saw Pete Rose. I never saw Mike Schmidt. I never saw, I don't know.
That's why it's still...
Dale Murphy.
In 1986, when the Mets won the World Series, they had played Boston in a exhibition game earlier that year, but... And it was at Fenway, but for the life, or I can't remember. I think it was at Fenway because it was for the Jimmy Fund?
Jimmy Fund, yeah.
It was for that, but it was an exhibition game, and I mean, it became meaningful because obviously the two teams met later on. But I don't even remember, I mean, those things were never even announced. I mean, I'm sure teams had, exhibition games all the time, but
it was
never
kind
heard
of,
about it.
There was a cool element to that. There was kind of a neat thing that when you got to the All-Star game, you were seeing, like, Roger Clemens go up against a National League order that he'd never saw before. They were kind of cool elements to that, right? But baseball went, no, you know what's more important? It's more important that we take these stars and we spread them out as much as we possibly can. There is no reason why the Red Sox can't go to Colorado. Like, there's no reason for that. They absolutely should go to Colorado and play the Rockies. And the Cubs, who fans are all over the country, should be able to play at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Right? It made sense. Then they started putting together these rivalries, like your Subway Series, your, Cubs and White Sox, and
freeway
all those.
Freeway Series,
right? Yeah, right? So you had all of these kind of, rivalries that were kind of built into the schedule. And that added another flavor. This completes this one lone thing now makes it all one league. It was the one holding point that was the separation, right? They no longer are playing just amongst themselves in one league and the other. That's all done. That's been done for over 20 years now. Now the absence of the designated hitter, I mean, the absence of pitchers hitting. Right? The universal DH now unifies everything. It's all together. It doesn't matter if you're in the American League or National League. There's no real differential. Yeah, I am too.
Glad.
I made this argument in Colorado for years when I was out there and I would meet National League guys. I'm like, why is this better? Why Denny Nagel batting is better than some guy you have on the bench that hits 20 home runs a year? Why? Tell me why
Mike
Hampton deserves
to
bat. Yeah.
Like Larry Walker, I mean, towards the end, especially for these guys who are towards the end of their career.
Yeah, why are you throwing him out in right field to go chase fly balls?
He's been a center fielder all his life, but he's a little old and overweight. Now he's a first baseman.
Arm strength is declining, can't run down anymore. And you got to stick him out there because but at the plate, he can belt you 28, 29, 30 home runs a year.
Yep.
But you got to stick him out in right field so he can track down fly balls. No, it makes perfect sense. And again, it's a win for the players because if I'm an aging ball player that can still hit, I now have 15 more teams that can vie for my service.
Yeah, listen, I mean, David Ortiz made a career out of it, right, didn't he?
Right, yeah.
I mean, who's that? Edgar Martinez. I mean, that's all he ever did.
Right, I mean, some of these guys are just built for that role.
Yeah, but for some of these older guys, I mean, you would see them all the time where they can't play in the National League anymore, so they're looking for American League teams to say, I just want to hit.
And
I can still do something for you guys.
Look, I'm all into a good 2-1 pitcher's duel. I love that. But I know where the bread and butter of this sport is. It's offense. I get it. People want to see home runs. They want to see hits. They want to see scoring. I totally get it. So does my dog.
Yeah.
My dog wants this. Look at that. My dog's all excited.
On cue.
About scoring. On cue, right?
No, I mean, okay.
By the way, she probably saw nothing. This is a reoccurring thing on the show where there's nobody outside, maybe one bird in a tree, and my dog loses
squirrel.
Her mind. Squirrel maybe ran just across the window.
My dogs like to bark at the rabbits that are wild in their neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, Because
just
I have no
just
idea why.
Because the life of a dog.
Yeah,
but it. But you know,
it's a
so
threat.
We'll talk to Gabe Lax about that coming up, and you know, kind of go through a little bit of the details. But the good news is, if you're a baseball fan, it's back. I am. I'm a baseball fan, but I'm glad I've got. I'm glad it's because it was going to be bleak if we didn't have anything in June besides the NBA and NHL finals when that wrapped up with like nothing. Grasping at other things.
Especially when you're like towards the tail end of the finals. Yeah. Like if you're the Western Eastern Conference finals before you hit the NBA finals, you're like, we got four teams to talk about. Come on.
And I'm a guy, and you're probably the same way in Houston. I throw a baseball game on. Like I watch the Braves because they're the local team.
Yeah.
I just throw a Braves game on. And I've said this many times. It's one of those things where I couldn't tell you the score at any moment half the time. Like, if you walked into the room and I'm on the laptop, you go, what's the score of the Braves game? I'm like, I don't know. What is it? 3-2, I guess. Look, you can see
it. Yeah, I have it on. I'm, you know, we're doing show prep or whatnot. And my wife has came in many times like, who's winning? I don't know.
Yeah, let me look at the, you know,
the score up on the TV. Oh, it's 6-2.
Yeah. And then I'll look up, like, if Freddie Freeman hits a home run or bases are loaded and it looks kind of interesting, I'll throw my head up and pay attention to it. Right?
Now, I will say this. The MLB Network threw up a graphic earlier. Wow, the free agents.
Oh, it's crazy nuts.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? It's not even looking like Freddie Freeman is going to sign with the Braves, and that would break my heart.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a Braves fan. If there's one guy that deserves to stay with the team his whole career, it's the way that city loves Freddie Freeman, for crying out loud. I hope they do sign him, but there's a report that he may not.
You know what? I don't know if you're a Braves fan or not, but I'm in the same spot with Kershaw.
Yeah, that's true.
He's a free agent. There's no reason for the Dodgers to bring him back except – He's a legend,
yeah.
With them, and that's, you know, and that's hard. That's hard to sign. It's also Kenley Jensen too. Like two guys who are, you know, catalysts for the Dodgers for many, many years could be wearing a different uniform next year.
I know. It's going to be happening pretty quickly. We're going to be rolling. I'm going to ask Gabe about that. Like, all right, now that this how much legalism has to go on now? Like, they got an agreement. There's still some work probably to be done.
They
like
still the need
lawyers
a sign.
Get a hold of it and, you know, get it all signed and all ratified. Once that happens, can free agency start that second?
Yep.
Do we wait like a day?
Like, are we going to have – I imagine we're going to have the week the NFL just had, right? Where
yeah,
every single
right.
day
every,
it's just
every
like,
day is going to be something.
It's like, oh, Aaron Rodgers signed. Wait.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson to the Broncos was bigger.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah, we're going to have that. That's going to be good. Carlos Correa in Houston.
That's a huge one.
That's a huge one.
And, you know what's so funny about local media, too? I've heard it over and over again here. These guys are so hopeful. Like, yeah, you know, there's rumors floating around that Carlos Correa, he wants to re-sign with the Astros.
Oh, boy.
And you know what? I'm like, I can see why he would want to re-sign with the Astros.
Are the Astros going to pay him
the
money? No, of course
they don't have
not,
that kind
right?
of cash. I mean, he's looking at 350.
Oh, he's easily looking at 350.
He might be even looking at 400.
He's you got to go. Yeah, you're going to go get paid. And, you may want to stay because you like the people and familiarity.
You know,
you'll go with the nine figures.
There's always that feeling of the team that gave you that shot that you always hold on to. And like,
sure,
you know, I owe you guys everything, but 350 is 350. I'm gone.
Yeah. Unless you're Jack Eichel of the Buffalo Sabres, who were formerly of the Buffalo Sabres. Last night, he's playing for Vegas now. Vegas went to Buffalo. It was his first time playing against his former team who he had a falling out with. And they booed him. And he said at the end of the game, he goes, well, it's the loudest I've ever heard this place in my entire time when I played here. it was good. You got to think he had that ready to go,
yeah.
right? Like on the flight, he's like, well, if somebody asks me this, I'm going to use this line. And a buddy was like, no, change it to that. And he's like, okay, yeah,
that's better.
That's even better. I'll wait to unpack that.
Yeah, because yours was a little too PC. You're
yeah,
trying to be
PC.
Too nice.
Just
get after it.
Give them the hint that the crowd was never like didn't have anything to cheer for. You know, your team stunk. Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, coming up later this hour, Gabe Lax will join us to talk about the Major League Baseball deal and the fun stuff that is about coming in the free agency rush. We'll have that for you on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue in his wake-up call. Sports Map Radio, Gabe Lex is set to join us coming up in about 13 minutes. We'll talk to him about the Major League Baseball agreement. By the way, today Drive to Survive is back on Netflix. I woke up a little early this morning to catch the first episode. Very excited about that. I tell you right now, I do think that there is something about these reality inside the sort of ropes of sports that really does lead to people going, oh, yeah, I'm into that thing. It's the behind-the-scenes look at Formula One.
Yeah.
It's season four came out today. It is one of the reasons it sparked a lot of popularity in the United States because it was around, but it caught – it was like 2018. It was around 2019. But in 2020, it really kicked – people were like, I got to find something to watch. And what they did was they were smart. What they did with how they promoted it in the trailers was they promoted the danger, right? So they didn't promote like building the car and the strategy for the races. They were like, look at these cars and look at them flip over and look at them crash into walls and look at them disintegrate and the drivers are walking away. And then you had like one of the driver's mother was like, I pray to God every race for my son's safety. Like you had this trailer that was on like really exciting and people were like, eh, what the heck? I got Tiger King and let me watch this. And it became popular. But it's funny that the power of reality shows, and this is kind of a larger issue here, because golf is going to do this now. And we've seen it with a number of different types of behind the Hard Knocks and things like that, like where we follow a team. Didn't we follow what was LeBron's high school team? Sierra Canyon, is that what it was? That was a high school team that was on the, they were on the road with them. There is something about the reality show aspect that we gobble up. And here's the thing. I think most of us understand what we're watching is nothing more than an editor's version of a story to play to you for its maximum value. Like, they do it all the time. So it doesn't matter whether it's Hard Knocks or Drive to Survive or any other sports reality show. You're more likely getting what the producers and the editors want to show you about something rather than maybe what realistically happened. Like all the tension of a certain situation may have been completely overblown on the show than it was. Like when you see a fight, Hard Knocks has done this for years. It's amazing Hard Knocks continues to do this. If you've ever covered an NFL team or watched an NFL team closely, you know when it's August and it's 97 degrees in Flowery Branch, Georgia, that two teams are going to probably fight when they're scrimmaging against each other, right? It's like they just do. It's blazing hot. You're doing these joint practices. You get a guy's putting his hands on your face and you're grabbing your helmet and twisting your mask and it's you're just getting sick of it and you're kind of tired and you're going to throw some punches. But Hard Knocks always makes it out to be like it's the end of the world. Like, oh, God, they had to separate these guys. Yeah, well, that's what you do when they're throwing. But it happens at every joint practice all the time.
You couldn't be more right about that.
You know?
At every joint practice. I mean, it's just got to be when there's got to be someone from each team. Maybe it's a rules guy or whatever, who's just sitting there knowing this is a ticking time bomb.
Of course, exactly.
And they're there with the scissors, like, just let me know when to cut the red wire.
Who wants to be practicing football in Metairie, Louisiana in August?
Right?
I mean, goodness gracious.
And you're just trying to make sure there's no fights within your team, and then you bring another team in, and those feelings that almost came to a head, maybe that's why you schedule practice with other teams, so that way there's unification now.
Exactly.
It's like, we're going to fight those guys.
They'll do the same thing on the PGA Tour one that they're doing, that they're working on right now. They'll take something. Somebody will be like, hey, man, your quarter's in the wrong spot there when you marked your ball. And then it'll act like these guys hate each other and they're going to stop hanging out.
No, but isn't that the whole thing between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau?
Right. Right.
It's all over slow play.
Right. It was all over slow play is right. Yeah.
I mean, rolling, I think that's kind of where it started. I don't know where it's grown to or, what the other reasons
what's
are.
What's happening to it? Yeah. Yeah,
hope
absolutely.
They bring that back. That's fun.
Oh, my God. That was such a blast. I know. It was great. But that's kind of the thing. It's fun to watch. They're always cool to watch. I mean, and again, they're not documentaries. Documentaries are different. I mean, documentaries are, we're going to tell you the story in this certain perspective. This is, we're rolling camera and then we'll just cut it up to make to promote whatever narrative we want to promote. Maybe these guys don't really hate each other, but we'll play it up. That's one of the things about what happened with Hard Knocks with the Raiders. Remember with Antonio Brown? Like, you knew Hard Knocks was really playing up the craziness of Antonio Brown, but at the same time, you kind of went, is he that nuts? And then you're like, oh, yeah, he is that nuts. He really was crazy. That really was
Or
wild.
Did he assume that role?
Right, because of the character.
He's like, oh,
right?
This is public perception of me. Yeah. I got an image now.
Exactly. And here's the thing about reality television, right? Once the fourth wall? Once the fourth wall gets broken, it loses its impact. We talked about this, a year or so ago with Real World?
Yep.
The first few seasons were great because nobody really knew what it was, right? So they would live their lives, and then they would be like, oh, it's camera. And then they would watch it later and go, oh, look at the way they did that. But after a while, people started going, I know exactly what this is, and I know exactly how to use it, and I know exactly what they're looking for, and I'm going to play this role in the house. And once that breaks down, then you lose its impact. And it's happened in sports. Like, I follow the Formula One season, and I know for a fact that I had drivers say, you know, they would say, oh, this is going to be interesting when Drive to Survive gets this. Like, they knew what some of this stuff was going to look like, because the cameras were following that particular race, and they would be like, oh boy, here they are. They're following us. I know what they're going to do with this. And once that kind of gets broken, it kind of loses its impact a little bit. If you feel like there is a manipulation of the real live thing that they're documenting, but it they're still pretty entertaining. I mean, I'm looking forward to this golf one, and I think golf is relatively boring behind the ropes. Right. I mean, but I think there might be something there.
I don't know. I mean, this one, especially
controversy.
If they include the Saudi Arabia stuff.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, my God. Or the Saudi League.
But I'm going to tell you right now, people who are producing this, if your whole thing is just showing me young golfers going to resort spas and having the time of their life and playing golf and making a lot of money and flying private jets all over the place, I'm going to get bored of that pretty quickly.
Yeah. One episode's good.
Right. One episode is good. When Jordan Spieth is like, well, I'm going to take the private plane now to La Seca, right? This private, big, huge resort, luxury hotel. Yeah. I'm going to get a little bored. I need, like, Jordan Spieth to, like, I don't know, punch Colin Morikawa in the face by accident or something. I don't know. I need something else.
I don't want the controversy to be, he's like, oh, I can't find my 5-iron anywhere. Packed it.
I know. Like to
and
me,
him yelling at the caddy because of it.
If the controversy is, I think he uses a 46-inch driver. Like, if that's the I don't want to hear it. I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
Boo. I want to be like, that guy's a cheater, and he cheats all the time, and we just haven't caught him yet.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Like, wouldn't it be great if, like...
Not just on the course, but off of it as well.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if, like, one of the golfers went, I know y'all love Phil Mickelson, but he's a jerk. like it would be like, whoa! Wow! Where do we get this? Right? Yeah. Like, I want something like that. Instead of just your basic... Well, I went out and shot 68, but that put me 13th. Maybe tomorrow I'll be better. Yeah. Like, I don't want that. I want, oh, yes. One time I saw Phil Mickelson drown a puppy. I was like, oh, really? Yeah, it was awful.
And if you want to take it a step further, because I know it's coming up because, I read the news. If you want to show a little bit about Dustin Johnson's private life.
Why not?
He is prepping for a wedding.
Yeah, it is. He is prepping for a wedding. Exactly.
Yeah, if you want to, I'm sure some of those guys got together for a bachelor party. You don't have to show us everything that happened at it.
Real quick, do you think the PGA Tour should say publicly if people are suspended and what for? Like, you never know if a guy's suspended or not.
Yeah.
They don't even say they don't even tell you he's suspended. It's one thing to say he's been suspended. We're not telling you why. They don't even tell you he's suspended. He just doesn't show up anymore.
Well, because I guess it's because you don't have to show up for every tournament.
Right. You don't have to go.
You have a certain amount you have to go to.
There's a level of privacy. Like, yeah, like, if you start noticing that Justin Herbert hasn't been practicing for 3 weeks and he's healthy, you're probably like, what's going on?
He's missed two games in a row.
Right. But if Phil Mickelson doesn't show up, he could be like, nah, I'm just chilling at my pad. I just didn't feel like going. Right. Gabe Lax joins us next as we talk baseball as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I was spending a lot of this morning. Baseball is back. They got a deal yesterday. And again, April 7th will be opening. Gabe Lax joins us, USA Today. A very good day, my friend. How are you?
Certainty, at least in some sense. So that's beats limbo.
No, purgatory. No kidding. Before we get to some of the nitty-gritty details of this, let's get started with it. Felt like every time they would come together, they would do these marathon sessions and nothing would come about it. I didn't feel very optimistic. Did this come out of nowhere, or was there a feeling like they're close and this could actually occur?
You know, you fool me three times. You know, it's kind of one of those deals.
Right, things. Yeah.
It felt close a couple times, and when it doesn't happen enough times, you start to wonder. I was just talking with Ron, like, you kind of wonder, you know, what are the true intentions here? You know, is this purely a union busting exercise? Do the owners really not want to have lower revenue baseball in April? You know, you just your mind goes to these places, and you really just do not know until, you know, you get the 20 something votes from the players and the 23 votes from the owners, at the same time, and think, all right, they really want to do this. It's really kind of wild. And I guess the galling thing is it kind of feels like the guts of the deal is something you and I and like five other random fan or media types to sketch out on the back of a cocktail napkin way back in December.
I was saying the same thing. I was like, it feels like this. They could have just done, why 99 days? If this is the deal you got, it doesn't look like major movement from what they could have probably hammered out in December.
Right. And, you know, as Rob Manfred said yesterday, you know, collective bargaining has a certain, in so many words, a certain sausage-making element to it that you kind of have to go through the process to really, like, birth the deal. But, you know, I mean, this is a pretty extreme example, you know, just talking to, you know, labor types in other sectors. And, they were definitely like, this is not normal. You know, we've never had a lockout. We've never, you know, strikes are pretty few and far between, you know, generally speaking, especially when you're talking about two really established entities. You know, I mean, the union's been around for half a century, you know, Major League Baseball has been around, you know, they've all done this before. So it really was something of an outlier. That said, this was a particular negotiation where both sides were pretty well dug in. And, the owners had a couple of W's up on the board and they weren't going to give those gains back very easily, even if you could argue that what the players were asking for really was, you know, I think in a lot of people's opinion, objectively, in the best interests of the game. So, you know, that I guess it's just the way it goes sometimes.
Is there a winner in this? I mean, did both sides win? Did both sides lose? Or is there a clear, we got up on the other side?
Yeah, I think, they always say a good deal is one where both sides are a little bit dissatisfied. I think that's
sure.
Definitely the case here, you know, so it's a, you could certainly term it that way. I think the owners won a little bit. I guess I'll start, the opposite way. The players made necessary gains because they did give some ground last time. They got a good deal of it back. They modernized the luxury tax ceiling, you know, which was woefully behind where revenues were in the game. And not just revenues, but salaries too. You know, I mean, Manfred makes the point that there is no salary cap, and so the ceiling is not directly tied to revenues. Fair point, I guess. But, that said, it stagnated in a 10-year period when revenues absolutely boomed. So that needed to be adjusted. At the same time, the owners managed to avoid major changes to player compensation. Free agency stayed the same. Salary arbitration stayed the same. I ran the numbers, and, you know, if you add up what the minimum salary increase and what owners have to pay into the arbitration bonus pool is, that's about $3 million per team. Essentially nothing.
Yeah.
So they managed to do all that and get expanded playoffs, which is going to add $65 million to $100 million in added revenue for them each year. So pretty good on them to hold the line and also make those gains. At the same time, you know, yeah, it's $700,000 from $570,000 isn't a bad leap for a minimum wage player and going up to $770,000. So it's it's not a draw, but I think both sides definitely got out of it what they came to get. So
this may be difficult to answer simplistically, or maybe not, but I want to ask you about the international draft. What exactly is it? Why would the owners want it? Why did the players not want it?
You know, it's been in the shadows all this time, you know, and it comes up and it's always like, you know, a very tertiary kind of ask on the owner's part. And then suddenly they decided to thrust it front and center here at the end. Yeah, that's something we didn't even discuss, and which I assume is just going to also be a win for the owners. You got to figure the players will eventually capitulate on that. But, it was nice to see the players hold their ground on this, because over the years they have sold out the amateur player quite a bit, and also the international amateur player by agreeing to bonus pools in international signings. And that's always been real easy to do because those guys literally don't have a seat at the table. You know, it's if push comes to shove, are you going to protect the interests of the rank and file of the union or protect people who aren't yet even in the system, even though those guys came through themselves and got really nice signing bonuses back in their day. So, you know, I thought it was kind of heartening that they at least tried to take a stand, and maybe they will still take a stand. But, you know, it's owners want to further suppress international signings. And I think they already really did that with the bonus pool. You know, Wander Franco is a Tampa Bay Ray, you know, and that cost them $7.5 million, which is, they obviously placed a very good and informed bet on him, and that worked out well for them. So for me, that says that the system is quote unquote working okay. You can save your bonus pool money for a guy you really like. But, you know, from the owner's standpoint, it's let's get all this under control and let's try to contain and have predictive costs in the international market. And, you know, the can of worms that is just, something that obviously takes a lot longer than we have time to get into is just the corruption down there.
Sure.
And the exploitation of kids, which you know, frankly, isn't going to change that much. It's just going to, it's going to take on a different form, I'm sure. You know, you can't regulate everything just by a draft. So, it kind of came out of the shadows, and again, the owners kind of successfully sprung it on the players and kind of forced the issue for it to be a leading thing on the table there in the end game.
So what happens now? I'm sure each side will polish this up a little bit, sign it, agree to it. When can teams now start going, free agents, where are you? What can we do now?
Yeah, no, we're live, man.
Yeah.
It was as of sometime last night. So, and of course, everybody's already freaking out. Where are the signings? And,
right.
You know, it is interesting. You know, usually, you know, the old 12/01 July 1st thing with the NBA, apparently, who knows? Maybe teams actually stuck to the rule and didn't, you know, have back channel negotiations all this 99 days of a lockout. But it is true that the rules changed, the luxury tax changed, the market, a new market has been invented and it needs to take shape. And so everybody's kind of recalculating. A lot of those upper middle class teams will be happy. The Phillies, not that the Giants and Nationals are in this class right now, but in many years when they are good, they are flirting with the ceiling. The Phillies are right up against it, to name another team. Obviously the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers, same kind of thing. They all need to kind of look at the new reality, because there was a lot of give in there. There could have been a lot of different scenarios. So now they know what the there is there, if you will, and thus can kind of determine the market. So yeah, it probably will pick up. I'm sure everybody's plugging all the algorithms in and seeing what gets spat out and seeing if Carlos Correa is a good buy for them or not. So yeah, it'll I think a little cooling off period is probably makes a lot of sense to get the lay of the land. And then once, you know, it probably will happen pretty collectively. Once they start falling, they'll really start falling.
So big picture here, we lost a few weeks of spring training here. The season's going to start a little bit later. We'll still get 162 games, universal DH, added postseason. Is this lockout memorable, or is it just going to disappear as yet another labor talk that, yeah, got a little bit crazy, but in the end, nobody really suffered.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a 30 for 30 on it. it seemed pretty dull. You know, I think you'll probably hear a few untold stories come out, but it really significantly changed the game. I'm not like a hard line traditionalist, but I don't think a lot of the changes are good. I think there could be a lot of unintended consequences, particularly with the playoffs, but it kind of depends on how you measure the quote unquote health of the game. Is it total revenue? Is it cultural relevance? Is it a satisfied fan base? Because these expanded playoffs could really kind of give a new wrinkle to September baseball, and not necessarily in the best way. You know, if you have four teams pegged between 84 and 88 games and they all know they're getting in the playoffs, that could certainly take a lot of starch out of it. And when the actual playoffs come and there's a 83-win team upsetting the 94-win team, it's going to happen. You know, hope most years that it doesn't, certainly if you're MLB. But it will certainly be viewed upon as a transformational time in the game. But these 99 days, I think, I don't think anybody's really too keen on reliving them, either for, masochistic sake or otherwise.
Gabe, always good talking to you, my friend. I know it was a busy morning, and I appreciate you giving us some time, my friend. Thank you so much.
I guess we'll have more to talk about soon. So, right?
Yeah, you got it. We'll be getting you on soon. Help us break down like previews and stuff. Thanks, man. Appreciate you. That's Gabe Lax on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save with Progressive's home quote bundle, progressive.com. All right, we'll wrap up the hour as we get you set for the weekend next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Gabe Lex for joining us from USA Today on baseball. And like you said at the end, now it's time to talk like, who will win the American League East? Is Tampa for real again? What about the Yankees?
Us fans, all we care about was money.
Right. Well, the Astros do, and they're very competitive. That's what we'll be doing. By the way, this weekend loaded with college basketball, conference tournaments, finals, and then, of course, Selection Sunday.
Is that on Sunday?
It is. I can't believe it.
God.
Like, are you saying Sunday, or were you like, is it this weekend?
No, I know it was this weekend.
Right. It's
amazing. I'm saying on Sunday.
Quick. Right, on Sunday.
I mean, it doesn't even feel like we've had a tournament in a while. Why does this one feel a little different?
I don't know. Because I'll tell you why. Maybe this is it, but for me, it is. So in 2020, we didn't have the tournament, and then last year it was like, it's all going to be in Indianapolis.
Maybe that's it.
And then this one is actually, we'll be going to Boise and Denver wherever they are.
Like, it feels normal again.
Right. Maybe the Final Four is going to be in New Orleans, so it's like all going to be around the country again.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. What it is, where it feels different, like. It actually feels normal this time. It feels like it's the real thing. I guess was last year even real?
Yeah, I know, right? I thought it was a fun tournament, though, last year. When we had the Gonzaga-UCLA game and then the Baylor-Gonzaga game.
Yeah,
Baylor-Gonzaga game where they just played great. Baylor was so good.
Got hot at the right time.
Yeah. And you know what we can do starting next week? We can start looking for our Spiro Ditas games.
Because
he does the NCAA tournament too.
That's right.
Where is Spiro going to be heading? Because he gets some good regions, and you never know when you get a good region. You never know. It's not like he's getting the D NFL games.
No,
he could be getting a very hot region.
Full of the most talked about region. We don't know which one that's going to be.
You never know. By the way, real quick, daylight savings time. You turn your clocks ahead. I know a lot of you will complain about it, but as our good friend Steve Zabin once said, I pointed out daylight comes later in the day rather than earlier in the morning, and this is what you want.
Yep.
And this is what you want. Those nights when you're on your patio at 9 o'clock in certain parts of the country and it's still light outside, that's better than when the sun comes up at 4:30 in the morning. That's not what you want.
Right.
Use the daylight at the end of your day rather than the beginning of your day.
And listen,
I ain't getting up early to enjoy the sun. It's, I already get up early as it is.
You know, you lose an hour of sleep.
Right, but
okay.
You do it once.
You get used to it.
You'll make it up somewhere.
Yeah.
It does stink.
That first week is always going to be rough, but you'll get used to it.
Exactly. And then, like, if you play tennis or golf or backyard patios or whatever it is you do in the summertime.
Coaching
soccer, right? Playing softball, whatever it is that you do, and it's light out late, this is why. So I have no problems with it. I've never had a problem with it. I know it's inconvenient. I get it. I think it's just something we like to complain about, and I think it's something social media has allowed us to complain about it more.
Yeah.
But listen.
I can't wait for it to be 8 o'clock and, it, you know. Maybe the street lights just came on or
just
not
came
on at
on.
All.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly. I'm outside chipping golf balls in my backyard at 8:30. I love it.
Yep.
I'm totally into it. Totally fine. Because like I said, I get up early for this show. You shouldn't have to get up so early just to get that one extra hour of sunlight at 4 a.m. That's what I'm saying. All right. We'll see you on Monday with a full analysis of the bracket. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. Sports Map Radio.